This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly. How are you this morning, Charlie?
You sound a little rough. Have you got a bit of a cold going on?
No, you know what? I just finished 1 week of musical theater camp, and so I've had 30 hours this past week with about 12 kids between the age of 7 and 12.
So you've been teaching them how to sing?
Yes, teaching them how to sing and act and dance musical theater, plus doing all my regular radio stuff. So it's been a very, very full week.
I have a lozenge if you need one.
You know what? I got my cup of water here. Oh, I had a coffee on the way down. So nice to be in studio, by the way, with you.
Can't you tell? We're live, and we've got so many special people here today.
We do. Yes, we have Paul Oliver here with us, who from the Urban Nature Stores, who's going to talk to us about birds. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Good morning. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. And not just birds, but urban nature. Right. So if you've got questions or thoughts, certainly we want to talk about what the weather impact on what's going on with nature, urban and rural, obviously. So we're hoping to get into some of that. But questions, we're happy to. Paul can answer anything. He's so good.
Yeah.
But then there's another special guest,
yes,
like super capital S special.
Take it away.
Sitting on the other side of the glass is an old familiar voice, my friend and yours, Frank Proctor.
Well, hello, Charlie, Dean and Paul. My gosh.
Yeah.
Listen to you. So what brings you into the studio, Frankie?
Well, I missed your pretty face.
No.
It's been almost a year and a half, I think, since I've been in the studio. And so I thought, look, I'm going to drive in from Hamilton, have breakfast with Charlie, and at the same time I'll go visit my son Toby while I'm here. So two birds with one stone.
Poof!
You know?
And hey, as I recall, I think it's your turn to pay.
I think
that hurts.
It must be steak and eggs today.
No.
And how about peasant under glass?
I can work with that.
You know what? I'm very impressed. He's mentioned two birds with one stone, pheasant under glass. We've completely got the bird thing going here
totally.
This morning.
Frank is so cool. All right. So for anybody who wants to call in.
Yeah. Okay. If you live in Toronto, this is the number you want to use, 416-360-0740. Or if you live anywhere else in this beautiful province of Ontario, you want to use the toll-free number, which is 1-866-740-4740. And of course, you make sure that you tell Ashy that you are a first-time caller. And if so, I will give you the garden wings. Okay,
ooh,
we want
gentle.
You to call often. We want you to call early. And please, one question per call, okay?
And if you want to get out on this gloomy day, it's gloomy in Toronto anyway, very, very overcast. I guess snow is forecast, perhaps?
It is, yeah.
Today, from 11 to 4 p.m., at right close to here, the Parkdale CD Saturday, presented by the Toronto Master Gardeners, happening at the Parkdale Library, which is 1303 Queen Street West, from 11 to 4. Seed swap. You don't need to, this doesn't need to be expensive. Bring some seeds, swap with somebody else for something cool, or potentially purchase and certainly utilize the brains of those master gardeners.
Right. I think I asked you about this before. You don't actually have to have seeds, so don't let that keep you. If you don't have them, you can go and purchase them, and then maybe you'll get into the whole deal of next season.
Exactly, swap. And learning about how to save seeds so you can swap next year.
You got it. All sounds good. Okay, very exciting show. We will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin here on Zoomer Radio. We have Paul Oliver with us as well today from Urban Nature Stores. And we are going to go to our first caller, which is Sandy. And she's calling from Guelph. Welcome to The Garden Show, Sandy.
Good morning. How's everyone today?
Morning.
We're well. We're having a this is like a party.
Yeah,
here.
We have a party.
I was so happy to see Frank Proctor this morning. I haven't seen him in ages.
Good. I have a tropical hibiscus. It's an African fringe hibiscus, mm-hmm. and the leaves are very small on it. I grew it from a cutting many years ago. I'm trying to find out when is the best time to do a root pruning on it. It's right now in a 12-inch pot, and it just flowered. It's just finished the flower, but I wanted to get it into a smaller shape so it has a better growing season.
Okay. Actually, really good idea to root prune hibiscus, tropical hibiscus, because they are very vigorous. They grow so fast. And before you know it, you've got a pot of roots and not a lot of soil. The impulse is to go to a bigger pot. Well, you're at a 12-inch pot now. How much bigger are you going to go, right? Before you know it, the bigger the pot, the bigger the roots, the bigger the plant, and then you have to move out and the plant owns the house. So, or raise the rooftop, right? What I would do is I'd wait till probably another month or so, maybe even, what is this, March, April, May, maybe 2 months, and then take it outside, lay the whole thing on the ground sideways, pull the pot off, get out your saw, a nice sharp saw, just trim away a bunch of roots, scrub your pot. I wouldn't try and go down to a 10-inch pot, but I'd go back into the 12-inch pot with fresh soil after you had washed it.
Okay. And how much am I trimming from the edge of the pot? Like 2 inches?
It's about that. It's all the outer. You're not going to get into the center. You're going to just do a trim all around the outside. So it's going to be fibrous roots, and there might be the odd bigger root as well. And from the bottom. Don't forget, prune the bottom. And if you can take a couple inches off the bottom, that would be good.
Okay. Of the root and that ball. Would be fine even if the leaves are in green? Leafed out still?
Yep, because it's when it's in green and when it's that time of year, the days are super long, plants are actively growing, and that's the time to do that kind of wounding. Modifications means you will get regrowth. So you'll get top growth and bottom growth.
Oh, okay. That sounds doable then.
There you go.
a perfect timing to be outside with the warmer weather.
Exactly.
Fabulous. Okay, thank you. Yeah, thanks for the question there, Sandy. And a really interesting question. We don't have a lot of questions about pruning the roots, actually.
No, it's a really good I don't know if I've ever had that question. Yeah. I've done it myself, though, on hibiscus. Because, like I said, at some point, the pot is just roots, and you can't water. You water every day. There's nowhere for the water doesn't get held because there's no soil left. Yeah. So it becomes a case of just cut those roots back and don't be afraid.
Cool. Okay. Sweet. Okay. Going to give the numbers out again before we go to this next caller, who I believe has a question for Paul. Yeah. Okay. So because we have Paul Oliver here from Urban Nature Stores. Great day. If you have any bird related questions or what else, Paul, any other
bird, outdoor nature, any of those types of things?
Any of those types of things?
Questions about little bunnies attacking your plants or things like that.
Squirrels entertaining you.
Yeah, we were talking about squirrels on the break.
Chipmunks.
It's funny how every time you talk about birds, squirrels gets into the conversation.
Deer. I had a question the other day about somebody going, all of a sudden the deer are eating all my evergreens. So, yeah.
Crazy. Okay, so 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. So we've got Sharon on the line calling from Gravenhurst. Welcome to the Garden Show, Sharon. What do you got for Paul?
Good morning. First, I'd like to say how wonderful it is to hear Frank's voice. What a treat.
Yeah, we love Frank.
Data phone in. my question for Paul is, I have an outside 17 stair open metal staircase that goes up to my deck. At the top at the landing about 5 years ago, a robin built a nest in the northwest corner. Well, she kept losing her eggs, I guess, to blue jays because squirrels and raccoons can't get to it. So, but 2 years ago, she built another nest over in the northeast corner, and she's had total success in that nest. My question is, I've been leaving the nests there from year to year. Is that the right thing to do?
She's going to come back to nest in the same area, And so some people will move the nest and she'll just build a new. Otherwise, she'll often come back to the same area, mess up the old nest, and then build a new nest.
Start fresh.
Okay. So by moving it doesn't mean she won't be back. And also moving it doesn't discourage her either. So if you want to clean up around the house, go right ahead and do that. When mommy gets back and she picks her nesting spot, she'll bring her own new nesting material there. But if there's some left over and the house is half built, she'll start and just build on top of that. But she will bring in new nesting material for this season.
Freshen it up for the babies.
She loves to decorate.
I think the other one is like a decoy nest, I guess, because that one's still there.
Oh, yeah.
So I have been leaving it, and my dog's been shedding so bad, and they say they like dog hair, so I've got about 10 pounds of dog hair I was going to throw out to help all the birds make their nests this year.
Yeah, one of the great things about that dog hair or cat hair is that take it, just put it in like one of your old suet cages, and let the birds then pick away, and they'll take it. Huh. It's great as a nesting material. Yeah. It's great for the birds, and it's also very good for the baby birds. There are lots of other things you don't want to put out. You don't want to put out the
dryer
lint, because it has a whole bunch of the fabric softeners on it. But dog hair is perfect.
Cat hair even.
Yeah, that's
even
in
though,
there too.
Even though they're people think of them as predators to birds, the birds are very happy to use that natural scented material in their nests. And
good point.
Suet cage is a great way to put it out for the birds to exit.
Good idea. That's great. Well, thank you very much. It was wonderful talking to you, Paul, and always listening to all of you every Saturday. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
Okay. Thanks for the call, there, Sharon.
Bye.
Yes,
bye, Frank.
Because we end up brushing our cat and kind of just like throwing clumps of fur and watching it blow around. But that suet cage is a good idea.
I have to say that I throw more out now than I used to. Things like, you know, you get a handful of grapes that the kids, you know, that nobody's eaten and they all shrivel. Nobody wants them anymore. And so rather than throw them in the composter, I just grab them and I throw them out into the lawn. And all the squirrels and all the birds, they all get them, you know, so they don't go to, you know, they still have a second life to them.
Yeah. Your kids.
We actually have a great feeder for hummingbirds for that. Okay. It's actually, you put the the older fruit in it, and it actually creates fruit flies, and the fruit flies pop out of it, and the hummingbirds just sit there and peck off the protein, which most people don't realize that hummingbirds eat all the fruit flies. That's their protein.
Yeah, so the sugar and carbs is from all the sweets and the nectars, but I know I saw that on your website, and it said hummingbird protein feeder, and I'm like, what? You got like some kind of steak feeder for the birds? I don't get it, but when I started reading it, I was like, good idea.
Now I know what I have to get. Because in the last few years, we've been getting hummingbirds because we have glads in front of our dining room window. And we have them now that regularly come around. They love those gladiolus.
And you've got to stay on top of when they're coming because we think that some of the birds might be on the move a little earlier than normal. So let's talk a bit about that when we come back.
When we come back. Okay. Yeah, we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio. And we're talking about, we're always talking about plants and growing things. And this week we're also talking more about birds because we have Paul Oliver here from Urban Nature Stores. And we always do something fun on the show. You always give us a secret word, Paul.
Yeah, secret for giveaways.
Yes. So this week we're going to do a secret giveaway. The word is sunny, S-U-N-N-Y. Go to urbannaturestore.ca. At the top is the secret code entry. Enter that, and we will send you an email, which will allow you to redeem for a free bag of sunflower hearts in any of our stores or online. And it's the no mess, no waste sunflower, so you don't need to clean up under the feeder. And it attracts all types of birds, and 100% of it is consumed by the birds.
Oh, they love it. They line up for this, any sunflower, but particularly when it's pre-shelled for them.
So now I've got a bird question. And it's not a bird question. It's a gardening question that comes from this. Okay, so I'm not using that typically I'm using seeds that has shell, and it's falling, of course, below my feeders.
The shells?
Now I'm raking them out 10 feet or so, 12 feet. I'm assuming that that will all become, you know, organic matter that is just going to go into the lawn as it grows.
Should.
I'm not going to get a big pile of it. As long as I kind of
keep
rake
it a thin layer on the lawn, it will decompose.
Okay.
Just don't let it be a big pile, because it will suffocate the lawn. You'll have dead lawn beneath.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, it's 100% organic. It'll disappear eventually.
Okay. Right?
Or if it's so much, seen that, you know, inches thick, then scoop it up into, you know, whatever, onto a shovel and then into the composter, or scatter, do the scatter thing.
Scatter, because it could still go on all the gardens, right? It is
absolutely
still organic matter.
Yeah, it is. You should see how many peanut shells I've got scattered around my yard, because the blue jays have been nonstop for the last several months, and Elliot feeds them twice a day. That's what happens when you're retired. Totally love Elliot.
They love it. They're like, they see him at the window. They come around. They're standing there waiting.
Oh, they're squawking. Hurry up. I'm looking for some more nuts.
Well, if you give peanuts out to blue jays at 8 o'clock every morning, they'll be out there squawking if you're 10 minutes late putting it out.
Because
they're time sensitive. Mm-hmm. They know where the feed is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And they'll squawk 7 days a week. If they don't stop for weekends or anything, they're out there at 8 o'clock every day.
Yeah. And then, of course, he feeds them again at 4 p.m. because, you know, he just wants to make sure there's food for the morning, just depending on whether any stays overnight or not. It's very funny.
Yeah. Wow.
But,
I get squawked at sometimes on the show here, too, the Dragon Show, if I'm not doing the right. Only occasionally.
Huh.
Not too often, but occasionally.
So blue jays don't go anywhere. They're with us 12 months out of the year, right?
They're here 12 months, but what you'll find is during the wintertime, they'll often migrate down towards the water area, so the north side of Lake Ontario. So in Toronto, we actually get more blue jays in the winter, and then as it warms up, they'll head back up a bit further north. Same as robins, will only migrate a little bit depending on how severe the winter is. So they may go down to Kentucky one year, they may go to Tennessee another year, or they may actually even stay in the Toronto area. But they don't do the big full migration the way hummingbirds or purple martins or that too.
Right. Yeah. So let's talk a bit about that. I mean, hummingbirds, you never know when they're coming back because they come from a very long ways away. And there are some websites, not coming to my brain right now, I think it's like hummingbirdwatch.org or something, where you can track, because citizen scientists, bird watchers say, I saw a hummingbird, and they start moving north. And once they get to the edge of New York State, it's like, oh no, fill the feeders, they're coming. So it's very exciting. So what are we expecting this year? It's the middle of March, we're way ahead of schedule in the gardens. What about the birds?
Yeah, so a lot of the birds are starting to come back earlier this year. We were expecting possibly hummingbirds will come back a couple of weeks earlier, so you want to have that feeder out by probably the mid-April. It sounds a bit early, but have it out so that if they get back here, there's food for them, because they also go to the same feeding spot year after year, and if the feeder isn't there, that's how you steal your neighbor's hummingbird. But for other birds, particular insect-eating birds, like any insect-eating bird, if they get back and the insects haven't started to emerge here locally, they need extra food. So robins needing food, putting out mealworms for robins,
because robins won't eat seeds, right? They eat fruit. They'll eat fruit.
They'll sometimes eat a little bit of suet if there's fruit and suet mixed in it. One of the things we actually encourage people to help if they're helping robins is a little suet cage, little stand on it, put it on the ground so that, because he's a ground feeding bird.
And
one with a lot of mealworms and fruit and in the suet, and they'll get the fat from the suet as an added bonus for them.
Yeah, because they're not seed eaters.
No, they're worm eaters. They like those worms.
I know. It's true.
But if they're getting back here and they're looking for food at this time of the year, we don't have a lot of the worms
there.
No.
So a lot of their natural food sources are being thrown off. So when we have global warming and climate change, one of the challenges is that birds respond quicker than plants do, or they respond quicker than the insect population right. does. And so the food match with the bird may not always match.
Right. Mm. And that's the scary part, is that we end up with starving birds because they're ahead of schedule.
Yes.
Well. So some tips. Obviously, mealworms you mentioned for the non-seed eaters. But I guess just bird seed in general. Well, this Dean's already looking after this for the entire town of Collingwood,
oh,
I think.
Yeah.
He's like St. Francis of Assisi. He's feeding everything. You and Elliot. So that's a good tip for our listeners. Is
yeah. So making sure the feeder is full, and it's not closed up. If you've got a squirrel-proof one, make sure that the spring is still working, that it's functioning. Nothing worse than a bird sitting on a feeder trying to get food, and it's already closed and it's not reopening.
Staying closed. Yeah.
And, yes. But the other thing that we can really do to help migratory birds is look around our house for glass that's a risk to the birds. We don't normally think of it, and particularly when we don't have foliage on the trees that's normally right. there, mm-hmm. some of the glass is more exposed.
Right.
Birds are also flying faster in migratory season. They're flying often nighttime or late day flying, or very early in the morning before it's light. And those are risks that they don't always anticipate, don't always see.
Right.
And like at my house, I have a glass railing, mm-hmm. but in the summertime, I have pots hanging on it, foliage covering it, so it's blocked.
Right.
But at this time of the year, it is a magnet for mm-hmm. harm, and so I actually have all the protective materials on it, so that
like.
The birds. You can put decals on them. I'm really lazy. The thing I actually use is it's a dauber, and it puts through an ultraviolet light spot.
Like a bingo dauber?
Like a bingo dauber.
Oh, yeah.
And you just go bang, bang, bang all across it. And it, for the birds, it looks as a solid material then.
Hmm.
For the human, they see tiny little dots, but hardly anything. But you can put strips on that are permanent, that stay
Stickers.
On there year-round, that you don't need to do anything. But it's a lot of times we don't think of as a risk. Oh, well, because we have a big maple tree, it blocks that window, mm-hmm. so it's never been a problem.
Right.
But when the maple tree doesn't have the leaves on it,
they don't see it.
And a bird is flying yeah. late at the day. They see through the window to the other side of the house, and they think they're just flying under a branch,
mm-hmm.
and it can be very harmful. And if that happens to a bird and he hits your window, we can even still help him at that point. Go find the bird. Put gloves on so that you're not actually exposing yourself to anything. But put them in a little paper bag or a box and just protect them and let them rest.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times they're just stunned.
Right.
And they're not don't have bones broken or anything. And you just want to make sure that the neighborhood cat doesn't find him before he recovers. And then probably about an hour later, you'll hear him starting to flutter around in the cardboard box. Take him out, open the box, let him go, and he can go on his way.
Oh, good.
Gotcha.
Good notes. Yeah. Then you're really St. Francis of Assisi.
Yeah. We've done actually the exact same thing. We've had those birds. The good news is there aren't as many neighborhood cats anymore because most people keep them indoors all year round. So you don't have as many skulking around the neighborhood. It's very odd to see a cat running across the road.
I know.
Now.
It's kind of surprising
it's like,
now.
Oh, my.
Yeah. You know, where I am, there's all... virtually, well, it's rare. We rarely see a cat.
Yeah.
But more skunks and raccoons and. Possums.
Gotcha.
God knows what else.
Okay. Amazed at how many possums we have around.
I know.
Possums.
Possums. It's yeah. I mean, we never saw those as children. Like those are new. Those are a climate. They've come.
All night
from
time
the
I even heard of a possum was on the Beverly Hillbillies. Yeah. When Grandma used to make it.
Yeah. That was possum pie. Okay. You know we're going to go to. Let's go to our next call.
I forgot about that.
We have Anne on the line from Hagersville. Welcome to the Garden Show, Anne.
Good morning.
Morning. How
I'm
are you?
Calling it. My original call was going to be about dahlia bulbs, but because you have somebody there speaking about birds, etc., I would like to change my question.
Mm-hmm. You go right ahead.
Last July, I had over a dozen hummingbird moths at my honeysuckle vines. Can they do harm to the vines since they're a type of moth?
Hummingbird moth. So it's a moth that looks like a hummingbird. It's the color.
Yeah, the wings flutter back and forth really fast, like a regular hummingbird.
Yeah, I don't believe they do any harm. I think they're just feeding
the nectar.
Yeah,
they've got the tongue that goes out and in, just like butterflies do too, as well. Let me. I'll double check though. We'll give you a better update on that once I double check that.
Okay.
Okay.
So okay, thanks
for calling.
So yeah, just hold tight, and we'll hang up, but keep listening, and we'll give you an update on that. Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Okie doke. Yeah, and thanks for the call. Okay, we are going to go to our next caller now, and it's a first-time caller. We have Deborah from Pawasa calling, and I think we have another bird question. How are you this morning, Deborah?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. I would love to give you your garden wings, your bird garden wings. There you go. Call them. There we are. Okay.
Welcome.
Okay, welcome. What do you got for us?
Well, I just first of all, a comment about the robin. I actually have had robins come to the feeder and eat off the feeder. So as far as seeds go, they want that as well.
Hungry.
But I just wanted to say I've got a new bird feeder that I put up. It's beautiful. It's octagonal. And it's got like a large structure in the middle that you put the seed down, and I painted it beautiful teal and off-white, and the birds are having a hard time warming up to it. The reason why I put it up is because the other bird feeders are smaller, and they really struggle. The big birds struggle. I've even had mourning doves come on it. So I put up this other feeder, but they seem to be leery of it, and I'm just not sure why. Is it because part of it is covered? Is it because of the colors I painted it? Don't know.
And it could just be that it's a new feeder. If a bird is used to going to an older feeder, even though you may have put out a better one for them, they'll often continue to the old feeder until there's a reason to change, either that you've taken it down or that it just gets too busy with other birds, and then they'll look for another feeder and move over there. A couple of things you can probably do is just take your other feeders down for about a week or week and a half, and the birds in the area will find the new feed source fairly quickly. The other thing is sprinkle a bit of seed on the ground under the feeder. The ground feeding birds will find it there, and then they'll actually realize that the food source is coming from up above, and they'll start going to it. What you'll find, particularly in the migratory period, is once you get one bird discovers it, then all his friends will find it very quickly. But you just need that bold first bird to go and feed at it. But I would probably just start right now by sprinkling a bit of seed on the ground. Ground feeders will find it, and then they'll very quickly learn that the feed is coming from above them, and they'll be up there at the feeder perch.
Little courage is required.
Well, there is always seed down below because the other bird feeders, it's a very, very tall feeder, and it's got three smaller feeders up top, so it's always seed is always getting knocked down. Now, the birds that are bravest are the siskins. The siskins are slowly coming up to it, but they're still leery. And this morning, I did get a blue jay and a grackle tribe, but they're still really leery of it. The plan right now is to let the other feeders empty out. And they say, oh, there's no feeders, there's no seed there. So, but they can see the seed. It's the other one feeder is higher than the other. They can look down and see that the seed is there.
Mm. Yeah, you know, the birds are unique. Sometimes it just takes that little bit of courage for one or two of the birds to start using it. In the front of my house, I have two feeders, but through the winter, I only have one of them. And it'll be the migratory period. It'll start to get packed, and I'll put out a second feeder at it, and it'll be full, and this one will all be the old one will be almost empty, and it still takes them a couple of weeks to go to the new feeder, even though it's the same feeder that they use every year.
Every spring.
And it's added every spring. But it just takes one or two of those finches to go over, or one chickadee, and then the whole gang shows up.
Yeah, it's like when I moved where I live, it's never been residential. So the birds are truly wild birds. Mm-hmm. And they didn't know what a bird feeder was. I mean, I had bird feeders, suet cages, all kinds of stuff out there, just pristine clean for weeks and then months. They had no idea.
It takes them a while. Yeah. I know when I put up my first one, I took a good week and it was, you know, two feet away.
Yeah.
But yeah, they weren't sure, so they kept going to the tube feeder. Yeah.
Well, they weren't going to any feeders at my place for the longest time. And then, like, one bird, and then 20 birds, and then 200 birds. It's cool.
And then they send out the social media message. There's a great feeder there.
Exactly. Check it out. The Bird Network.
Okay. Well, thank you for the question, Deborah. And just, I guess, persistence, patience.
As long as it's not something. As long as it's not something that I've done by painting it pretty color, that's all.
No, that won't discourage them.
I don't think they really see color.
Yeah, they're not going to see the bright colors the same way you do. No. So for them, they're looking for the food instead.
Mm. Sweet.
Okay.
Thanks for your call.
Thanks, Deborah.
And quickly to go backwards, Anne's question about hummingbird moths. Actually, I don't think I've ever heard of them, but they look an awful lot like a hummingbird, and they fly with a very fast beating wings, and they do unfurl. So their tongue is like a coiled up hose looks like, and it's tucked under their chin, and then it uncoils into the flowers, or in the case of their hummingbird feeder, for the nectar. So they will not, she mentioned by some plants, they're not going to hurt the plants.
No. Okay.
Cool. And they're very big and noticeable and beautiful. So yeah, keep your eyes peeled. There's more than one species.
Okay. Question answered for Anne once again. Okay. We will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, and we got Frank Proctor in the next room, and we got our producer Ashy is here, and we got Paul Oliver from Urban Nature Store. And, you know, you're always telling me that I'm Francis of Assisi, you know, feeding all the birds.
Francis.
But I brought everybody in scones as well. So I wasn't just feeding the birds this morning.
These are lemon lavender
scones.
Lemon lavender from your garden.
The lavender is from the garden. Yeah. Sweet. I don't grow the lemons, not just yet.
Yeah, but we're working on
it. If I talk to you long enough, I probably will be able to do that.
Your family's going to hate me. They already do.
They just roll their eyes. They go, oh, yeah. Paul Oliver on the never going to have another bird feeder. As we do, we have Paul Oliver here from Urban Nature Store, and we have they have a contest. If you go on to urbannaturestore.ca, their website, and in the top, is it the top right?
Yeah, top center.
Top center. You can punch in the secret code word, which is Sunny, and Sunny is the name of a mascot.
Of our mascot, yeah. Our little chickadee mascot, but it's Sunny, and S-U-N-N-Y.
N-N-Y.
And that will get you a free bag of our sunflower hearts, no mess birdseed.
Excellent. I have a quick question. You talked about taking bird feeders maybe down while the other to direct them towards the other one. And as soon as you said take it down, it reminded me something that I'm actually guilty of not doing maybe as often as I should, how important it is to clean our feeders.
Yes. Excellent. And this is a great time, right as we're changing the seasons. Make sure you go out, clean the feeder, make sure it doesn't have any of that residue that's built up over the winter and that. And it's just good soap and water, or if you need to sanitize particular wood feeder, using one part vinegar and about four or five parts water to clean it. Doesn't need to be harsh, doesn't need to be any strong chemicals, and you probably should avoid any strong chemicals with it, but just give it a good scrub, a little elbow grease, and the birds will appreciate it, and Mother Nature will love you for it.
Yeah, it's healthier, and particularly with avian flu, we want to do everything to help keep the birds as healthy as possible.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. Okay, we're going to go to our next caller, Leslie, in Toronto, and Leslie is a first-time caller. Welcome to the Garden Show. There are your garden wings, Leslie.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning. I want to grow soybeans in my garden this year, and I don't know where to buy the plants or which kind of plants to buy.
Okay, so why do you want to grow soybeans? You want to harvest soybeans.
Yeah, I want to so I can grow edamame. I had one little plant last year that I just sort of picked up by accident, planted it, and I got so many beans from it, and they were delicious, and you can freeze them, so they're...
Got to tell you, edamame are popular around my household.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. I've never tried growing soybeans. So really what you need is soybean seeds, and you are in Toronto.
Yeah.
It's not the kind of thing you think of as picking up from Mackenzie Seed or Ontario Seed Company. I'm going to have to look that up for you.
It would be normally the big egg suppliers for seed for farmers up there, but
co-op.
A 50-pound or 100-pound bag of soybeans is probably going to be a little too much in Toronto.
Yeah.
Do you know anybody who's a farmer, or have you got any plans to go out into the rurals and drive around and admire the upcoming solstice or anything like that, or not solstice? Eclipse.
Yeah, I can have a little road trip.
Knock on the door of a farmer. That's what I do. Can I have a handful of seeds?
Yeah, I bet you they would if you went to the door and said, could I just have like a couple of cups of seed?
Because in Ontario, traditionally, agriculture, the crop is 1 year corn and 1 year soybeans. So back forth and back and forth. So if you see, because they haven't plowed yet, it's still too early, last year it was a cornfield, then you know it's going to be soybeans, or likely, unless it's fallow, because sometimes there's a fallow year in there too.
Right.
And just it'll be soybeans. And so that's what I would say off the top of my head. But I'm just going to do a quick Google and see if I can come up with something a little more guaranteed than that.
Okay.
Yeah, I know that they also have different kinds of soybeans, and some are recommended for eating and some aren't. And it's like, oh my God.
Yeah, because some would be more higher protein based for processing.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for the question, and we'll do an update before the end of the show. Okay, is that fair?
Thanks so much.
That's a wee, right?
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's quickly go to our, you know, no, I have to go to a break. I'm sorry. I need to go to a break. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show. You have an update on the soybean edamame question.
I do. Drum roll. Thank you very much. Vizes, F-E-S-E-Y-S.
Vizes.
Vizes. But it's going to be a fair amount, but it's only $11. Okay. Yeah, higher yields than Toya. This is specifically Karakachi edamame soybean seeds for sale. And expect maturity 80 to 90 days and lots high productivity. There's good details on their website. So F-E-S-E-Y-S, free shipping.
Love it.
Do it.
Okay, get your edamame. Here we go. Okay, and now we're going to go to Mary, who's calling from Toronto. And Mary has, I think, a question for Paul. Welcome to The Garden Show, Mary.
Yes, I do. Thank you. And good morning to you all. When I was listening earlier, you said not to use, I was told years ago, not to use the dryer lint. I never use for years the scented stuff you put in or whatever because it shrinks materials. So whatever lint I get is from my clothes. And I don't know if I could use that. I have extra suet things, so I thought I would try to do that. And I don't know if that's a good idea.
Yeah, the problem with the dryer lint is it may have a lot of the detergents that are from the washer that are still on the clothes that are...
excuse me for interrupting, but I was told by having it fixed years ago, I do my last rinse with vinegar, and I clean my machine twice a year just running vinegar through it. So, and I use very little detergent, always have.
Yeah.
But there's still the problem of detergent on the clothes?
Yeah, the real problem is the lint being in the nest and the baby birds chewing on it. For a mature bird to have ingested or that is not going to be as big a thing, but the juvenile birds, they're sitting in the nest. They have nothing else to do. They'll often chew on what is make up the nest. Mm-hmm. And them ingesting something that may have fabric softeners or detergents or yarn that is in long pieces can all be quite harmful to the birds. The less detergent that you've used and the more fussy you are about how you collect it is going to reduce that risk. But if you have other alternatives like dog hair or cat hair.
Hairdresser hair.
I would suggest using that instead.
Yeah. Okay. It just reduces the risk by doing that, I suppose.
My feeder, but you're talking about the migrating birds because sort of late 2023 or whatever, I got birds I never had before. So if I put out my feeder now, will I get those birds that I'm still getting? I have no idea what they are. They're a little smaller than a sparrow, and they have a white breast and like a gray, you know, a Russian blue gray top. I've had them coming all the time. I don't know what they are. But if I put out the feeder now for the migrating birds, will I get the same ones I got earlier? That's actually the ones that were going north.
Yeah, you may catch them on their migration going coming from the south, going north at this point. The one beautiful thing about birding is every time you put out the feeder is looking for new birds that you've never seen before. And that's part of the challenge as well as the enjoyment of birding. And you may have just gotten a bird that was a bit off the migratory path in last fall. He may be coming back, may stop by the same feeder again, but chances are of finding, seeing other birds that you've never seen before is very likely at migratory time.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And that's why getting the feeders out there for migration are really important to the birds, but rewarding to us.
Sweet. Mary, I do have to run because I have one more caller that I want to get to, but thanks for your call. And before we go to that last caller, I just want to mention also that I got an email from Gloria in Porcupine, Ontario, who says that you can buy at Northern Wildflowers. It's
in
a Sudbury.
Sudbury.
Yeah, you can also buy edamame seeds. So there you go. Northernwildflowers.ca. is their website address. So there
Sweet.
You go. Yeah, okay.
Love it.
I think this is going to be a fun way to end maybe the show, the last call. I've got Diana on the line from Mississauga, and might be a bird-related question. What do you got there, Diana?
Well, not exactly a bird. Close to a bird, it's a squirrel.
A squirrel.
It goes hand in hand with birds.
So this is kind of a gardening squirrel question, but I think it's more a squirrel question. I have a pergola, which I have a grapevine growing on for the last 20 years or so. Last year, I noticed the squirrel insisted on going up my grapevine, the stem coming from the ground and that part going up to the pergola, and stripping it. I guess it's stripping it to get the fodder for the nest.
Yes.
This has never happened before, and I don't know what to do about it. Is it going to hurt the grapevine? Is it like...
No.
The squirrel is just going to kill it.
Yeah, you would think so. You would think that stripping the bark would kill the plant, but it's a grape. It's pretty hard to kill grapes. They're very, very vigorous plants. I wouldn't be overly worried about it. I guess I was going to say options would be to provide something else for nesting materials. If you've ever had a honeysuckle shrub, an old one on your property, same thing. The bark just shreds and strips, and the squirrels will just peel and peel and peel. And the honeysuckle is fine. It doesn't care. It just grows more bark and more flowers and more leaves. So I wouldn't be overly concerned. I mean, I guess you could put, you know, one of the spray deterrents to keep the squirrel away just from that spot and try and, you know, keep them away. But yeah, I personally wouldn't be too worried about it. Unless for some reason if the grape starts to ooze any liquids from that main trunk where the bark has been stripped, then I'd get worried. But as long as it's dry and clean, I wouldn't be worried at all.
Okay.
Okey-doke.
So deterrents are detergent then.
No, it would be, there's different deterrents. Yeah, what have you got at your place?
A couple that I recommend is actually called Plant Skid. It was developed by the Swedish Forestry Service. Does everything from squirrels to deer.
Mm-hmm. Spray,
and then Bob-X, which is a similar one. It's a smell-based, so it thinks the food is bad there, so they avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
And it bonds to the woody part of the plant and protects it. It's great for trees if you've got animals chewing on the bark, mm-hmm. and which could be harmful for a large tree or that.
Yeah, it'll kill. Well, rabbits will girdle. Euonymus is a classic. And once they're girdled, they're dead. So, yeah, you don't want that to happen. Then that's down at ground level. But stripping the odd bit of bark's never been a huge worry.
Okay, so there you go. You relax now, Diana. You don't have to worry too much about the squirrels. We were talking about squirrels on the break about coming up feeders, and so they can be. You sell baffles?
Baffles that they can't get around. There. It's with squirrels. Part of it is the type of feeder, the baffle, and the distance. Mm-hmm. So keep in mind that a male squirrel can probably jump straight from the ground up about 4.5 or 5 feet, and if he's running off a branch or something, he can fly through the air about 8 feet.
Yeah, exactly. They grow wings temporarily.
Gotcha. UrbanNatureStore.ca is the website. The keyword is Sunny, S-U-N-N-Y, which is the mascot. You want to put that in at the top in the center, and you'll get yourself
a free bag of Sunflower Hearts bird seed, which is the no mess, no waste feed.
the best feed going, because no mess, and the birds will line up, flock for it, and line up.
Yeah. Now, hey. I got to tell you, I'm disappointed that we're in our last 30 seconds or so, but I'm very excited because now we get to have our, our birthdays are coming up,
yes.
So we get to have our birthday lunch with Paul Oliver and with Frank Proctor, and I don't know, maybe we can twist Ashy's arm, we can put things on remote control, and she can come over.
Yeah, exactly. Let the robots run the station while we're gone. Sounds good. Thank you for coming in, Paul. Always a joy to have you here.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, share some of your knowledge, because this man, he's got answers for everything when it comes to nature out in the garden. Looking forward to a nice chat with my buddy Frank, who's waiting there looking hungrier by the minute, and he's buying, by the way.
Woo-hoo!
Thanks. Thanks, Dean. He laughs. Do you want to say goodbye to everybody, Frank?
Sure. Hey, I've enjoyed my brief stay, believe me. Good to see all of you.
Sweet. Thanks for coming, bud. And Ashy, thanks for all your help. Thanks to the great callers, as usual. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.